Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman. With Jeff Fawcett, PhD, we come to you weekly with a critical, independent voice on the politics and practice of health. We can't wait for Obama to create green jobs. Where's the incentive for him? This work needs to start without him or the government. It needs to start with us. We need to get busy. And the need grows depending on where you live, where the need is most imminent, and where there are young people ready to learn a new way to make things happen, a way not beholden to large rapacious corporations and probably under the radar of the government. Not illegal, just underground where it can't be destroyed as so many worthy endeavors have been in the past. No good deed goes unpunished in the society, it seems. I want to air the stories of people who are standing up and doing what needs to be done now. Today I start with West Oakland, in West Oakland where there is need and vision. Stay tuned for an interview with Tony Coleman of One Fam Bikes for Life. First, an editorial by Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett.
Thank you, Lena. As I'm sure you know, we are hurtling toward a fiscal cliff. The imagery is vivid and provocative. When we land at the bottom of the cliff, we'll be in an economic wreck. I'm also sure you know that this imagery is very deliberate. It's intended to cause fear and create panic. It's a very useful thing for the people who are driving us toward the fiscal cliff because fear narrows our focus so that we see some things very clearly and many things not at all. This strategic use of fear is common in many social environments. In addition to being a regular tool used by governments, it's rampant in medical institutions where urgency and panic are used to motivate patients into doing what institutional actors, such as doctors and nurses, think ought to be done. It's also used by employers to keep workers in line with threats of layoffs or closings if workers become unionized. In other words, hierarchical social environments use fear to maintain the social order as conceived by those at the top of the hierarchy. Regarding the fiscal cliff, what we're told to fear is a financial catastrophe, destruction of the social safety net, increased taxes, and much, much more. Avoiding the cliff, we're assured, avoids all these calamitous events. Yet there's wreckage in that direction as well. A direction filled with what are called sensible increases in revenue and sensible reductions in so-called entitlements. A direction in which everyone shares the sacrifice and everyone pays their fair share. This is complete nonsense, as I'm sure you know. Those sensible measures are as devastating as the wreckage at the bottom of the fiscal cliff and equally worthy of our fear because these sensible measures are a continuation of the assault on the working class that's been underway in the United States over the past 40 years. In other words, the fiscal cliff and its avoidance are both mechanisms that will further immiserate the working class, who continue to be referred to mistakenly as the middle class. Most of us are not shopkeepers or self-employed professionals. The vast majority of us work for someone else. In polite circles, immiseration is referred to as declining socioeconomic status. People whose socioeconomic status declines are at greater risk of sickness and ill health. Again, in polite circles, referred to as negative health impacts. Recall that the fiscal cliff is to be averted by imposing cuts on Medicare and Medicaid, programs that provide medical care disproportionately to those whose health is going over a cliff of its own. So the immiseration is compounded. People whose socioeconomic status declines are more easily frightened. It's a psychological effect of a biological process. They're frightened because the world, in fact, has been made more frightening, and it has been made more frightening by the people who created the fiscal cliff in the first place, who turn out to be the same people who are going to keep us from going over the cliff with sensible budget measures. How convenient. You'd almost think it was an intentional strategy to do what illusionists do, distract us so we miss the sleight of hand. In fact, it is intentional. They really do want to savage Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. So that you don't think I'm dewy about Medicare and Medicaid, these programs simply provide better access to medical institutions that are not at all above using fear as a tool to prevent social disruption among patients, meaning that it is possible for people to have control over the medical process and not the other way around. To bring this full circle, then, causing fear by fabricating a fiscal cliff and its avoidance becomes a self-replicating system because either path results in an objectively more frightening world. That's because it's not about balancing budgets and all that claptrap. It's about pounding the working class further into the dirt so that the capitalist class can increase its control over the social product. From both our own experience and the scientific literature, we know that fear affects the decisions we make, as do our other emotions. Fear has its effect by focusing our attention on the object that frightens us. Research on what's called fear extinction talks about chemicals buzzing around in our brain. Research on what's called fear attenuation talks about mindfulness and a host of other psychological practices at the service of frightened individuals. These are therapeutic, not collective, solutions. In the aftermath of the hurricane, Occupy Sandy emerged. People created solutions to that frightening event. Although natural disasters aren't good for your health, being creative and resilient in the face of them is. The same is true for disasters concocted by humans in positions of power. A transcript of this editorial is available at yourownhealthandfitness.org. I'm Jeffrey Fawcett. Take care of yourself.
Jeff Fawcett is a political economist, writer, and health integrationist who produces this show with me and is primary author of our book, Too Much Medicine, Not Enough Health. Now to today's topic, which is green jobs from the grassroots, and our guest, Tony Coleman, who is founder and director of One Fam Bikes for Life. He's been a nonprofit organizer and community activist for at least 17 years. His grassroots organization has created successful green jobs to encourage the financial independence of young people and to create viable alternatives to incarceration. We're very, very pleased to welcome you to the show, Tony.
Hey, thank you so much.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Running businesses where people live, this is a novel idea. What were the major events that drove you to start One Fam in about 1996, both in your life and in the world?
Well, I was making a big transition in 96. I mean, I had just been out of prison for about a year. I went to a wonderful place in San Francisco called Walden House, and I had a 17-year sentence, and it was kind of like a halfway house situation. But there, I learned so much about just life in general, and I think that everybody should have an opportunity to be in this kind of setting where you learn about, you know, peer groups and just different things about yourself and about life in general, and it just prepared me. So then, when I started to exit, I had a plan, and I was just determined. And once I found my calling by volunteering and doing the work, I knew what I wanted to do. And by having a plan and by being prepared to that point, it was sky's the limit after that.
There was also a lot going on between the community and the police, too. I mean, there were, as there are still, some shootings and things like that. And I think you got involved in some actions also, did you?
Oh,
not?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it seems it's been bam, bam, bam since mm-hmm. I got involved with activism, because shortly after me transitioning and getting off parole and getting a job doing this work, because I started off as a peer counselor working with folks that was getting out of jail in juvenile hall. Someone got killed in the neighborhood, and it was a very highlighted, high-profile case at the mm-hmm. time in San Francisco, the Aaron Williams campaign. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, just launched the campaign, and I got some folks together. And that's when the Ella Baker Center was just starting off. They weren't even a community, you know, they were a lawyer referral agency. And I went to them as for technical support when Van Jones was just, it was just like one staff person. And we got a group of people together, we started campaigning. And when we started, because the Aaron Williams campaign, what I wanted to do basically is this. I just wanted to make sure that the public had an opportunity to be there, be present when the officer was being held accountable. This man had been pepper sprayed, tied, and left in the back of a paddy wagon. And when they were holding him accountable for these hearings, at the for these hearings, the only persons that was in the audience was off-duty officers with their union hats on. It was very intimidating for the family. It was only like three family members, and I went, and I seen that, and so I just said that we got to change this. We got to make sure that the public knows that there's a public forum. Thank God that we even have a process in San Francisco that, you know, that you can file a complaint and then there's a process and that the community can make public comment. And I just wanted to exercise that, and I wanted people to know about it. But what happened is it turned into a large campaign that was on the news every other night. I mean, and we brought in this new wave of activism, which they were calling hip-hop activism, because a lot of the youth that we were able to turn out at the time were not your typical activists. I mean, they were young folks, young people of color coming from the neighborhood, and they had their different way of engaging the public comment. Some of them would do poems. Some of them would do break down and just do some very, very passionate, you know, things off their heart. And every week it became the place to be. Every Wednesday was a place to be where you know that all these folks have been left out of the process for so long now, felt that they had a process where they can, you know, where they can hold the system accountable, and the police were just off the hook. And so what the police did instead of, and what they did is they ramped it up even more, because then they would bring more union folks, so then the room will be split in half. So you had all the off-duty officers on one side and all the community on one side, and every Wednesday it would be this big ruckus. I mean, to the point where we would start shutting it down and say we want a bigger room. And so they had to accommodate, and so we had a big auditorium at the Hall of Justice where they ended up putting us at. And through the whole process, two or three of the commissioners walked off the stage before making a decision. Willie Brown at the time had to appoint new people. They finally fired the cop, Mark Andaya. And this set off, we built a movement out of it called the Third Eye Movement, of all these young people that were just now getting into activism and learning this stuff, and it was just great. And at the time, we were meeting at the Ella Baker Center, so it helped the Ella Baker Center as well. Van Jones, it helped all them. He was great at the time. When we were all together, it was a great, great thing. We, but like with everything, you know, things, the politics, money, everything starts to come into play, and, you know, groups divide up and stuff. But we did get some good, we got some good run out of it. We got about 8 years out of it, because right after that was the Proposition 21 campaign, and we were very, very active in that campaign. So it's good that you can do a campaign, and then after the campaign, that's all you wish for, is that people are engaged and empowered, and that you can start a couple organizations from it, and that's what we did.
You know what? Just let me mention that we're talking with Tony Coleman from One Fam in West Oakland, and we're talking about green jobs from the grassroots. So this is Your Own Health and Fitness, and I'm Lena Berman. Tony, you there?
Yes.
Okay. So one of the things I'm hearing is that you came out of prison at a time where a lot was going on, and you were sort of washed up in it in a certain way. But it's very difficult to go through what you did. I mean, I'm not asking you yet about what your young life was like and what sorts of stuff led you to prison, but I have to imagine that, you know, coming out of prison is no matter how serious the offense, is very serious a transition to make. So you. It sounds like the timing had something to do with inspiring you to do this, but not every young person that comes out of prison is drawn to public work the way you are. So, were you mentored?
I think it. You know, I'm not I'm not special by any case. There's a lot of folks that have this in them. Like I met most dynamic and good people I met in prison. It's just the fact that when they get out, they don't have a lot of resources, or they don't have the community to kind of like bring, you know, supports that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just happened to find my way and be exposed to something. That's why I'm passionate about working with young people, because I always want them to get what I had. I want them to get the, I want them to be exposed, because I don't feel that I'm special. I just feel that I just was, like, exposed to the right kind of community and exposed to the right things, and then they would be, they would pick up on it. And sure enough, that has happened. Some of the young people that I have trained through the years and have been around me have done just as good work as I have, just by being in the presence and being exposed to things and getting the training and, you know, just having a community where this is where, you know, that we're doing. So that's all. It was like, because most of us, like, I grew up in the Tenderloin in San Francisco.
Oh, boy.
So you know,
it's not an easy place.
I've been around, you know, I've seen it all, mm-hmm. you know, by the age 13. I didn't see so much stuff go on as a, with a single mother that was addicted and on the street. So we had a young youth group of folks that we used to just hang out all night long, and we had to look out for each other because most of our parents were in the same situation growing up down there. But, if, you know, going to prison was just a part of the lifestyle. And, you know, and most folks, you know, I still have friends that are still caught up in that revolving door.
Well, that's why I actually would argue that you are special. And I think it's a lot of influences that make someone special. So you may not want to be too egotistical about this, but what I'm trying to say is it takes a lot of people don't do things alone. They do it in community. That a lot of what happens to us that pushes us forward to do the work we do and the things we're suited to do comes out of some kind of community push.
That's right.
Yeah. So why don't you go ahead and describe the organization and the programs you're doing? Because they're remarkable. I mean.
Oh, yeah. We're having, you know, a lot of fun doing the work that we're doing. I mean, we're met with a lot of challenges as well, but it's so rewarding to be able to, I mean, even just to share it, you know, I get emotional about it. I mean, we was just at the Green Festival, and we were able to share, and I think you were there too, and it was just awesome to be able to talk about our work and how we evolved to where we at. I mean, we started off this way, and we still do the work. We still do the same work that I've been doing for the last 17, 18 years. I was working with the American Friends Service Committee with the Quakers for a long period of that time, and due to the downturn of the economy, I lost that gig, you know. And so it was just like, what I'm gonna do? You know, it was kind of like stressful. And but right at the time of this happening, we started doing some bike rides, because one of our youth started doing a lot of bike art on his bike. And so he started doing, so we just wanted to evolve that. Because as an organizer, basically what I do is, you know, I'm trained to just meet folks where they're at and kind of like build a community off of that. So if they're into breakdancing or turf dancing, what they call out here in the Bay Area, then I'll set up events around that and give a reason for young people to come together and have meetings and just get organized. And then I expose them to other stuff that may go on. So I might invite them to, you know, a rally or something. So since we're organizing and we're a unit, now I get to expose them to other things, and that's how it happens, and that's how I got brung along. And then these young people get to speak at different rallies. Then they get the bug, it bite them. Now they're, like, caring about the community or leading campaigns or coming up with some awesome ideas about how to bring stuff to the community and stuff like that.
Well, you said something very important, and it's something, I mean, I think you should be lecturing to some of the white progressive organizations that are floundering. So some are very powerful right now. I mean, certainly the Occupy movement is getting ahead of steam, and there's off groups too. But it'd be nice to have you, the thing that struck me is you said you meet people where they're at. You bring people in, not by trying to change them, but by observing where they are already and where their interest is and where their talent is and their passion, and that's where you bring them in. So
that's right.
Like you, when you started the Bikes for Life, which is these bike shops, one of the things you did was a bicycle repair skills competition, which is brilliant, you know. I mean, you got people to show off their skills, but you built this bike shop, which is this complete system of not only training people, but giving them a vocation, which is part of the green economy. It's this healthy, it's not part of this gas economy. It's you're on the bike, you're part of the bike, you're in the middle of the community, you're in the neighborhood. And then the bike shop actually makes some money.
That's right.
And how is it doing?
Oh, it's doing great. I mean, we're going on our third year. That's what I wanted to say is that when I lost a job and then I had some success doing these bike rides we started a peace ride, and the kind of complexion of the riders was just so diverse and so amazing to see all young people ride along, old people and white people and mm-hmm. kids with dreadlock and gold teeth. I mean, 300 riders taking over Oakland riding down the street. It was like something new that I hadn't seen. I've seen Critical Mass, but it didn't have this kind of flavor to it. And so I thought, well, at the same time, I needed to figure out a social enterprise for ourselves because I want to continue to work. How do I continue to work if I don't have a job and if we don't have no funding? We need to have a business. So we wanted to form a green business. So thinking about the success that we had with the ride, how do I expand on that? And that's how Bikes for Life came into play. And now we're going on our third year. And thankfully that there's a credit union in our community that gave me some seed money. It wasn't much, like $5,000, that I was able to put a down payment on for the space. And I got a wonderful space right like 3 blocks from my house, right in this community. I mean, now I'm in this community and I'm really building with the residents. It's just an awesome feeling to be knowing that you're in a community, you're making a difference, and you're a role model for mm-hmm. young black mm-hmm. and brown people mm-hmm. to show them that there's other ways that we can. And that's what we need more of. We need more models. And I'm just so honored to be able to be in a position to be able to have a space where young people, even just residents of all ages, could come down and they can work on their bike. They can participate in some of our events. We do a lot of events. We even do this historic tour of the neighborhood since we're in the birth of Black Panther neighborhood on bikes. And so we have like 30 people from the neighborhood, and some of them just moved to the neighborhood. So it's a good way for folks to get an introduction to the neighborhood, because what happens is that there's a lot of gentrification going on. So our shop has been a unifier, because maybe folks are, maybe just because they're white and they move into the neighborhood doesn't mean that they're a gentrifier. And you know, so when we have a shop that can, you know, break down some of these things, then it helps us all come together as a community, because diversity is good. It's just gentrification ain't good, because you have some folks who don't care about being a part of a community. They just think that they could come in and they're going to make the community better because now they're a new homeowner, and now everybody else that doesn't look like them or don't have as much money as them is the reason why it's bad when it's been neglected for 50 years.
No, this has been going on for so long. I mean, this is an old story. The music never changes on this one. And what you're saying is so true. It's so funny because as children, there are things that were, you know, like as simple as Sesame Street, where you see a neighborhood in New York where it's integral, where there's the shopkeeper and there's the teacher and there's this person and that person, and everybody knows and relies. So everybody has a place. Everybody has something to do, and everybody gets to be part of this thing. And that model goes back to when we were hunter-gathering people. I mean, this is how humans usually are supposed to live, is sort of tribally.
That's
like
right.
This. So I have to think that young people in Oakland are really responding. I mean, first, not only are you giving them something to do and to engage them in a sense of community, I mean, that's so much better than the alternatives, you know, which is the gangs, which also give you a sense of community, but you get this sense of stuff, and then you get a job, and you're also up on a bicycle, which is so healthy. I mean, I've seen people actually cure themselves of bipolar disorder because they're bicycling so much that they feel good all the time.
That's right.
So I have to think you've got some nice stories of young people in Oakland, you know, responding and getting involved, and I would assume that they're starting to carry the work forward, huh?
Oh, yes. That's wonderful. I mean, you know, you give folks, just like you said, it's not, that's why I don't feel like it's a special gift or thing. It may be a calling that I have.
Oh, you clearly have a calling.
But it's not because you find yourself, if you find people and you put them in the right situation, they all have this within them. Because
that's right.
What you said, it's basic instinct. You know, us coming together, we all need love, we all need community, and this is just a basic element that sometimes is not, you know, people don't get to have for a number of reasons, and most of it is because of poverty. And when you're able to create a community in a sense and strip some of this stuff away, that basic essence is there. And it just needs to come out in certain ways. And that's what we're about. We're just about love and about coming together. I do say that I'm kind of like, I do, you know, in this work, I'm very passionate, so I am sensitive, you know. So I do get sensitive when I'm, like, turned down for a grant.
Oh, hell yes.
Or, you know, people don't, you know, I still have yet to really get any kind of, like, real push, any real kind of, like, funding, any kind of, like, big grant. Like, you know, you hear a lot of this stuff about the green economy and about people doing it, and we have yet to see that in the community. It's just like a lot of rhetoric. Here we are. We're doing it. We have everyday stories going on that's happening. And you'd be surprised. We're not even on the radar with some of these.
No, I'm not surprised, because if you really look at what's going on, the altruism is going out either outside the country or it's going to, I mean, it's not going to New Orleans or to Red Hook in Brooklyn. The altruism is, I mean, except for the Occupy movement, there's been very little interest. And everybody's very interested in people, and I'm not saying it's not important, but people in Palestine and people in the Congo and stuff like that, where there's terrible need, but there's terrible need here in this country. In our own communities, there's remarable need,
mm-hmm.
and it gets ignored. And young people are our future, you know. So, yeah, it's very hard to find funding for what you're doing, because it doesn't. In the end, it isn't sexy enough, and it doesn't engage, you know, celebrities enough. Your speaking at the Green Fest was really important. That's the kind of thing you need to keep doing, I think, because other communities should find out about what you're doing, and maybe you can get some kind of fee for, you can charge to train another group in another community, and you get a little funding for doing that, you know?
I mean, we're getting so close to being self-sustainable. So that's the whole thing. Our shop is self-sustainable. It's just that we can't pay staff. Like,
right.
The shop, we're going on 3 years.
Right.
That's not by no grant. That's not by anybody. That's by us working on bikes.
Yeah.
And we're able to pay the light bill. We're able to pay the rent. We're able to even pay the mechanics to come there on a day labor job, to come
mm-hmm.
there. The residents could come down, and if they want to help out, some of them can even get paid. So we created our own self-sustainable thing going on. But we just need an extra little push so we can pay staff, because I'm one person, you know what I mean. And volunteers is kind of, it's a job in itself just to coordinate volunteers, and, you know, they run their time, and then they have to go back to work or whatever their thing is. It's just hard. And if I'm doing stuff that, you know, would require at least 10 people, and I'm doing it by myself, so I'm, you know, it's going to get done. It's just going to get done in the time that is humanly possible. Now, with a staff, we could get a lot more done, and then we have a lot more ideals, and we can serve a lot more. Like, we also want to do some bike library. We want to be able to create a system where folks that live in the neighborhood who don't have a bike or work here in the neighborhood can just come and get a bike and check it out. You know, we have a lot of ideals that we can move on.
So you, of course, know that you are dangerously close to what the Black Panthers were doing. You know that, right?
Yeah,
giving people meals and taking care of children in the morning and
That's right. All
that stuff. Yeah, no, remarkable. They were remarkable. I remember them. I'm old enough to remember them. So,
yeah, so we just follow.
So you're doing it. Yeah, no, and you know, there may be some things that will come out of it, but why don't you go ahead and tell the audience what you need? Since you've got an audience listening, tell the audience what you need.
Well, we just, you know, basic things. You know, sometimes it's not always about money. Sometimes it's just skills. You know, people have certain talents and skills that if you are a person listening now and you got a talent or skill and you like to give back to a community, there is no other place, you know, we're at the top, that you can get, that you can serve at and feel rewarded and see your results immediately. Like, you will leave feeling, you will have a good feeling. That's, I can promise you that, because we are doing the work. It's magic is happening. Anytime you come, I'm not the only one that's doing this. I'm just saying, here in West Oakland, if they took some time and they came and volunteered money,
so
or
what,
they came
what
and volunteered time.
So what kind of skills do you need? What kind of people? What kind of specific? Because you also have a media project where you have some radio stuff happening and stuff like that.
Yeah, we got.
So what kind? Be really specific. If you could have anything you want, what kind of people would you want to come in with? What kind of skills to do some trainings?
Oh, well, you know, people that have workshop skills that can give skills. Like, we want to start a whole section on just recycling and because we're surrounded by a lot of recycling plants, and so there's a whole economy that could be set up around that. Just if we had a person to come in and help us get that going.
So that would be somebody who has some experience in something like Urban Ore in Berkeley, or some experience running and doing recycling stuff.
That's
and
right.
Learning how to make stuff out of the recycling.
That's
stuff.
Right.
Okay.
And then bike mechanics. Mm. We always need more bike mechanics because we are, you know, a donation base, and, you know, it's a nonprofit, and that's how we were able to survive, is by donations. People donate a bike, and we're able to fix it up and sell it.
Well, and in particular, I might mention that, you know, I remember in the late 60s when I was bicycling around Berkeley, I had a friend who was a bike mechanic, and he was working for Missing Link on the campus, which was a student-run bike shop. And he got hold of an old frame from just a regular old bike. It wasn't even a particularly light frame, and he built me a 10 speed because that's what people rode back then, was a 10 speed.
That's right. Oh, they back on that.
And
they just call them road bikes now.
Road bike.
I mean, that's all.
With
10
speeds?
Seller.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Old 80s.
Oh, I thought the road bikes were the ones with no speeds.
No,
they were just your legs.
Road bikes are like 10. Like
10.
We used to call 10 speeds,
yeah,
with the drop down handlebars.
Yes.
Those are called road bikes now. And
yes.
Everybody wants those.
Really? Oh,
yes.
I have an old Peugeot. I should call you up
off the
air.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'll donate it. Okay. No, seriously, I will. But anyway, the point is that, you know, people used to, when it was locked up, people would come by and stand there and look at it and go, oh, wow, look what he did. And it was a rare and valuable bicycle because of the work he did. And, you know, it occurs to me that you could make some custom rides.
Yes, right.
You could, and then you could sell them. So people should donate the bicycle that's getting moldy in your garage.
That's right.
And you get some more mechanics in to help them learn. So people can donate that time. What other skills
do you need? Well, fundraising skills. Someone that has administrative skills that can know how to write a grant, research and write a grant and submit it. Because I think we have a marketable enough program going on, and there's a lot of grants going out, because we can't say that there's not no money out there, because if you look on these grant sites and stuff, there's a lot of money given out every day, and you'll be surprised who gets it. And,
oh,
you know,
no,
and
I know,
like,
about this.
Like, what? I never heard of them. I was trying to put together a resource manual for people, and it's like, what? I didn't even know they were, you know, it's that kind
of
thing.
Oh, it's really
there's
hard.
A lot of corruption.
It's, oh, yes.
You know, it's a lot of just, you know, I don't know. I just, you know.
Yeah, I don't even want to speculate, but it's. I know this from experience.
We could do a lot better in that area. So if we had, you know, a grant writer and a fundraiser, then maybe we can, once we have something applied, then we can at least follow up on it, and we can say, hey, you know, our grant is in. That's a main thing, a main flaw, a main weakness of us, is being able to have administrative kind of grant writers on the ground,
yeah,
that can help us, because we're out here doing the work, and then at night I got to kind of like catch up on all this stuff. So you will get emails from me. It's typical 3 a.m, because then that's when I got to do all.
That's when you have the time. You know, I got to take a brief musical break. I got so involved with you that I forgot to look at the time. So let me just break for about 60 seconds, and
sure,
we'll come right back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. I'm on the air with Tony Coleman, who is founder and director of One Fam and also Bikes for Life. And we're talking about grassroots. These green jobs are coming right up out of the grassroots in West Oakland. So please stay with us. We'll be right back after this.
No more lying friends, wanting tragic ends. They won't go when I go. All the bleeding hearts with sorrows to impart, we'll ride it from the start, and they.
Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman, here with Jeff Fawcett, and I'm on the phone with Tony Coleman from OneFam. Visit our website, yourownhealthandfitness.org, for easier extended access to our over 500 archive shows. Check out the changes to our library card feature. Find out about our practice, a free stream of this week's show, our book, and lots more at yourownhealthandfitness.org, all spelled out. If you need to email us, it's admin, A-D-M-I-N, at yourownhealthandfitness.org. And Tony, you've got some websites to give out if people want to connect with you, or even an email.
Oh, bikesforlife.com. Bikes with the number 4, life.com is our bike shop website. And our organization, OneFam, short for One Family, is onefam.org. And that is our nonprofit organization. And Bikes for Life is a project of OneFam.
Okay, so we were talking about the skills that you need, and I'm kind of getting a picture here. It sounds like people can donate old parts, old bicycles, any of that stuff. You can donate anything. You might even, you know, if somebody's got some experience with recycling, it would be really cool to have a kind of urban ore thing your organization right there in West Oakland, you know, where you've got doors and windows and building materials and sinks and toilets and bathtubs and all that. So if somebody knows how to set that up, that would be good. If people have money, obviously. That's the most main thing, I would say. It's very hard to get money for nonprofits. We tried forming a nonprofit. It's just uphill, and very, very difficult. But, see, one thing that you've got is... another way to think of this is you're too small to fail, you know?
Yeah.
Instead of too big to fail. So the bailout has to come from the taxpayers, but the people right by you who will benefit. And so grant writers and probably people who just want to come and hang out and find out what you're doing will probably have some ideas.
Oh, it's such a great investment
for them. Yeah.
Spiritually, financially, I mean, just to see the work being, you know, that actually... something from the grassroots. They invest their time and their money, and to see the results from it, it's amazing to be able to reach out and touch it, and to be a part of it, and to be able to add input. Like, we have a volunteer meeting tonight because we're going to give away bikes. We do it every holiday. Every holiday season, we give away bikes, and we're fundraising for that now, going around to all the bike shops and fixing up a whole bunch of bikes and getting bike donations. So we have a volunteer meeting tonight, and your listeners are welcome to come. It's down here in West Oakland. We're right near West Oakland BART station, across the street from the West Oakland Post Office at 1608 7th Street. That's where we're going to be having a meeting for the volunteer meeting tonight, and talking about how to run this, because on December 28th or December 29th, depending on what day we choose, we're going to give away bikes, and it's an awesome thing. It's something that you will... you know, if you ever plan to want to volunteer, that's how I even got into this work. That's how I got passionate about it. That's how the bug hit me, is by volunteering. You get a lot from volunteering. I mean, a person is coming out of prison. If they volunteer into something, they may get pick up a bug and just want to just, like, do that for the rest of their life type of thing. You know, because a lot of times these applications say that you got to have a BA or you got to have all this kind of stuff and just kind of, like, weed you out. But if you volunteer, it breaks a lot of that down, because you're right there volunteering something that you're passionate about, that you like, and you can end up with a job. That's what I tell some of my young people.
Oh, in fact, you know, the biggest crisis in this country right now is that a BA is not going to, you know, that'll get you a job at, you know, doing stocking at Sears. You know, it doesn't get you much of a job anymore, a BA, and even people with PhDs and MBAs and all that, you know, they're not getting the jobs anymore. So... The obviously, volunteering and finding this passion that you have, it's going to heal you from the inside out. I mean, if you want to get technical, all the research shows that we are meant to be in community with each other, and we're meant to be engaged with each other, and not, you know, in a way, not just hooked onto a device or I mean, although the social media may help with stuff, it's you want to be face to face. You want to be with people on the ground and engaged for the real health changes that you see this kind of stuff. And I have to think this has made a big change in your family. I mean, you have, how many children do you have? I have
three,
son.
And I have two of them are grown. I'm a grandpa now.
Aww.
And so, and I have one more to go, and he's 13.
Mm-hmm.
And yes.
And
positive and a negative, because when you're an activist and you're doing this work, you spend a lot of hours caring for other people's children and being out in the community. And you have to learn to find a balance. And, you know, I've struggled through the years of doing that. And I owe my kids a great deal because I share that with them all the time. We just had Thanksgiving together, and I'm so happy that it turned out good. And I don't have to feel guilty for being away because they turned out good. But, you know, you do, you know, you add, you know, when you become part of the community and as an activist, you do spend a lot of time away.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I used to want to bring my kids all the time. It means they won't go near me now.
No, thank you. You go on ahead. You go, Dad.
But I'm a sports dad, so my kid is in the sports, so I get to go around and I get to, you know, be the assistant coach and give out juices and stuff like that. So it's great. And we're right here in the community. I mean, I never leave this area. That's another thing, is being, you know, a part of your community. I don't have to leave. Everything is right here. We are recycling our dollar. The dollar that we make here stays right here in this neighborhood. And that's another thing that the Panthers were trying to instill in people, is like to recycle our dollars, to build our own economy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're doing. And that's what I'm saying. We're doing such all these things that's read about and, you know, talked about a lot. We're doing it. And you would think that that would be met with a lot of people that want to give out, that want to support us, because they are giving their money out. They're just giving it to other groups and to other things. And there's no accountability, you know, because once you are in some kind of elitist kind of situation, those are the networks that you know.
Oh, absolutely.
And you don't really know grassroots. You don't really need, and you'll get the story about the grassroots from some people that's like higher up and just like, you know, rub elbows with certain kind of people. And so that's kind of like how it is. It's the same dynamic that we have in this capitalist society, is that the people, it's not about what you do, it's about who you know.
That's
so
right.
You could be doing, I could be saving lives on a corner every day, resuscitating somebody every day in front of my shop. Every day I could be doing that, and that would be a beautiful thing, right? But if I'm not rubbing elbows with somebody from Google, or if I don't know the person at the, you know, the Vanguard, or these big grant societies, I'm not speaking at, you know, Harvard, or I'm not, you know, the you know, the fellowship person of the year type of dude, that, you know, it'll just be, oh, they'll give me a plug, you know, they'll pat me on the back and keep it moving. And but as soon as you ask for, like, can, you know, get some resources, or can I apply for a grant, well, let me introduce you to this person, and they'll be gone, you know.
Yes.
So
have you formed any co-alliances with other organizations that are doing something similar in other parts of the country? Is there some kind of cross-fertilization going on?
Yeah. I mean, in the nature of the work, we're always networking. We're always trying to build alliances and allies. So it's just it's part of the work. But, you know, in this kind of work, it's a lot of, you know, you either doing the work or you're you know, it's departmentalized. Now, back in the days when I said we started Third Eye Movement, Van Jones was such an excellent person, because he was able to go raise funds for us. While we were able to be on, I was able to be on the ground and do all the stuff that I'm doing now. I'm still doing that. But then I had a person like him that was dynamic, that was able to go and speak and talk to those things. But what happens as you get, if you get big, folks, then they'll just split, you know, and then they're the ones that, you know, getting the, you know, the attention, and they get the resources, then they, you know, it's hard to keep those kind of that group together, because then folks will just go start their own thing with another group somewhere else.
That's right.
And then, you know, the grassroots people, you know, we're just left here, and we got to keep.
But the other side of that, though, is that I would guess that your community is tighter now. I mean, that you're,
it's like a
good orchestra, right?
Sometimes, because it would be tighter if we had resources and they were able to, like, be attentive.
Yeah, I hear you.
Be more attentive to people and to our ideals. We were able to, you know, we would be able to execute a lot on our ideals, the things that come up in meetings and our surveys.
Mm-hmm.
We would be able to go ahead and do those things. But without a staff, without kind of the capacity to actually go execute, then you don't, you could do a lot more, and we can do a lot more.
Yes.
And so, you know, even if I'm the executive director, I also work at the shop. I also do the workshops in the community. The other day, I was knocking on doors.
Yeah. You know? So we need to clone you, I guess. We have to.
Right.
So you know, another challenge that we see in progressive organizations, a grassroots organization, is getting people to work together Do you have it? Is that another challenge?
It's another challenge because they put us against each other because, you know, it's a competitive type of thing. You'll have groups instead of us, and that's what I was going to mention at the Green Festival. That was some, even in the bike thing, it's just like it could turn out to be competitive. Like, you can start something, right? And then, folks, you can get people empowered and like, oh, that's awesome. And then they will be like, you know, I want to replicate this on my side of the town. And that's great. You'll be like, whoa, that's great. But by the time they start replicating something on their side of town, next thing you know, now it sets up this dynamic where you're almost like competitive.
Yeah, you're competing.
Because you're going for the same grant, and then you're going for the crowd of people. So, and then you're doing, of course, you're doing your own events autonomously, you know, on different dates. Sometimes you end up having something on the same date, you know. So that's what we need to work more closer to.
You know, what capitalism did about this was that it created franchises where you don't let somebody else do what you're doing. You patent it, and then you say, you can do this, but you have to pay me to do it. But that doesn't leave a good taste. Let me just tell people that you're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness, and I'm on the phone with Tony Coleman, who is founder and director of OneFam Bikes for Life. And I guess it's onefam.org?
Yeah, onefam.org.
And bikes.
O-N-E-F-A-M.
And then it's bikes with the number 4, life, and that's .org too?
No, that's .com.
.com. Okay. And this problem on the left is where there's very few resources, and there's kind of a species problem, which is people do compete with each other and talk trash about each other and all
that's
that
right.
kind of nonsense.
And you got people to speak on behalf of a whole group of people that don't have that kind of connection anymore, but they know how to speak about it. And then the funders, they don't really, you know, go the extra mile to go and check on how their dollar is being spent. They will rely on these key people that's at the top, these same 5 people, to feed them the information that satisfies them and that their money and makes them feel like they're doing a wonderful job. And they're saving lives, and they're doing, just applaud each other. They have awards that they give out to each other. But then when you're in the grassroots, you ask the common Joe about any of these organizations, they'd be like, who? What? I don't know about them. I ain't heard about, you know. So they get by serving just, you know, and I'm saying they may have good intentions. But once you become a part of a system, then you're just pleasing the system. You only are accountable to the person that's giving you the money. And then that's, you know, and the grassroots people are always the ones that's the last one that's accountable.
Well, you know, it strikes me that you started this without those people who give out money. And I know it's really hard to do without a grant. But, you know, it might even be the granting thing. I mean, it's so political, and it's so biased. But in a way, the trick here is to figure out how to make this thing run without that. Yeah, how do you make it? Because
that's
the whole
saying.
Idea
that's
of a green economy.
Goal.
That's
I mean,
the whole thing.
We're mm-hmm. going on our third year by being self-sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I lost my job in the process, and you know, be right when I started this. So I mean, I'm still paying rent at all these places. I'm still got food on the table. I'm still taking care of my kids.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still driving around in a car. I mean, so, yeah, it's because of being self-sustainable. It's not because somebody gave me, you know, a grant. Now, but I'm just saying that a grant will help us
mm-hmm.
even get a little bit further. So then next year, once if we get 1 or 2 grants, then after those 1 or 2 grants are gone, we won't need no more because we don't need it now that much because we need it now just to build a capacity of a staff. So we can execute on a few things, like, you know, like I said, like the idea about having the bike library, about the thing about the recycling thing.
Yeah, and selling a bike, selling custom-made bikes
right.
and stuff.
Even coordinating a volunteer takes
mm-hmm.
a staff person.
Yes.
You know, it's just like that's the kind of thing, you know, just like when I was out this weekend knocking on doors, handing out flyers, that should have been somebody's job. You know what I mean? So that's what I'm saying is like we just need the capacity. And then the shop is doing great for itself. It's sustaining itself. But we just not—it's not making enough to do payroll and to do all these community ventures
mm-hmm.
at the same time. Now we're going to get it to that. I think it has the potential to get to that, especially with starting other enterprises off of that, like the recycling thing and all that. It can find a way to do that, and we love the fact that we can start try to create a job down here. That do a program down here that ends up with somebody having a job. So for instance, like if it's something like a delivery service on bikes, that a person could be down there, or a taxi service. Like this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to figure out ways that we can create these kind of jobs for our residents here in the community that's all around this recycling and green stuff. That's what we want to do. And we can do it. And we are going to do it. By God, we are going to do it. It's just about when. That's the question. When.
Yeah, the trick is going to be to get your own community to give up a little cash. It doesn't have to be a lot. But that's, you know, obviously that's how Pacifica is surviving barely,
that's
by
right.
the skin of our teeth for 64 years.
We would like that model more than like a grant, because then that way, if one person falls off, you still have all these other people. That was just like the Obama thing, is like when everybody's chipping in $10, that's more better than just getting one grant, and that's the only person you, because then when you lose that one or two grants, then you're devastated. But if you got millions of people giving you $10,
mm-hmm.
and one of those people could fall off, then it's like, well, yeah, we will rather have a donor base, and that's what we're working towards now. But even setting up this campaign, you know what I'm saying, which on top of everything else I'm doing. So that's another person that we need. We need somebody to help us come in and help us to set up a donor-based campaign. And I will do it. You know, if somebody came in and was like, you could be here, she's going to speak here at this time, we need you to be over here at this time, we need you to do this at this time, I'll be doing that. You know what I mean? That's the kind of support I need.
Yeah,
right,
someone
now
to help you figure out, what, like the Green Fest, what kind of places
that's
to hit.
Right.
But you've got a media program, too.
Oh, yeah.
Aren't you doing some radio stuff?
And we're doing some radio, and we're starting now. We're getting it back started on next week, because for the winter break, we're getting it started. So we're doing I'm training the first youth next week. It's from 6 to 8, and it's on Berkeley Liberation Radio. So, it's, you know, we have a platform to be able to train young people on how to do media and to go around and interview people in the neighborhood about things that's happening around in this neighborhood, in this, you know, 10-block radius of where we're at. We got a young person, and we also got a person that's like, you know, 30-something. And so we got two shows. One is the young people, they're like teenagers, and the other one is like 30-something. And these are folks that's like straight off the block. I mean, straight off, like, if you know, straight off the corner. Like, some people would be, you know, they'll, you know, see them as a thug, maybe. If they was to pass by, they would see them as a bad, you know, person that they probably wouldn't want to get to know. These are going to be the people that are going to be doing interviews and running the radio show and talking about issues that they care about and having callers and just touching with the community.
Well, keep all those sound checks, because you can shop that show to to some of the local, even AM stations and some of the local. I mean, I started by doing a drive time segment on fitness. This was like 20 years ago. And the radio, the manager came out and said, wow, you've been on the radio forever. You've got this great voice, blah, blah, blah. And I said, no, this is my first time I was interviewed. And so he started me on these drive times. I kept the tapes. And then I shopped it to one of the commercial small talk radio stations in Sonoma County. And they put me on once a week, opposite Dr. John McDougall, who pushes a vegan diet, which was a little odd because I don't. And, you know, it just grew from there, and then I submitted stuff to KPFA. So all your media project stuff, you need to keep those sound checks and even have people, like, reassemble them, get them on the web, get some media stuff on the web. Just, you know, my experience is that the more people hear from you, especially because you clearly have a lot of love. You clearly have a big heart and a lot of passion and a lot of energy, and it's infectious. So not just you, but other people who get bitten.
Yeah.
You know, you got to get it on tape and get it, I mean, on DVD,
well,
you know, on DAT.
And whatever. I do, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, tape. Nobody tapes anymore. I'm in the dark ages.
You know,
on disc, on your
disc,
CDs
and
stuff.
That's an excellent idea.
Yeah, yeah.
I have been doing that, but I didn't even think of the magnitude on how much that means. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. No, and I'd be happy to. We can talk afterwards or something, but I can, you know. But it's not, you know, the tricky part about giving your life over to this kind of mission, where you're called and you show up and you do it, is it gives you everything. You know, it's like I told somebody once several years back that doing the work that I've been doing, I feel like, not that I want to die now, but if I died now, I'd know that I left having done what I could to make the place better. You know, I got a chance to talk to really smart people, and I got to talk to people about some real stuff, and that's really, you know, so you get a lot from the work, but it never kind of gets to the point where you're comfortable. You always have to struggle doing this work, because as we said, as soon as you start to dip into some of these agencies, they start dictating and also making you jump through a lot of hoops. I mean, maybe eventually, if you become more noticeable, although I've been on the air for almost 20 years, you hope that somebody will come to you, and it's possible, you know, but certainly getting the sound out, just getting it on the web and getting it out there to people and doing talks and stuff, certainly, because it's clear that you've been transformed by this experience of doing this.
Thank you. And I think that it is, I've watched a documentary, and maybe some of your listeners have too, called The Secret, and it's about basically, you know, claiming that intention. And you can manifest a lot of things just by your vibrations. So I've really been trying to practice that, because I really do believe that you can will stuff in. If you're just like when I got involved with this work, I was determined to do this stuff. Like, it was like and once you're bidding by something, a passion, that you can make things happen. And it's no different than that. And I just need to know how to do that in this other realm, as far as like trying to get resources. Like, my whole thing was giving. Like, I want to be doing all these neat things and, you know, setting up events and traveling the country and talking about stuff and meeting people. And I did that. Now it's like switching gears to, like, now how do I ask for money? How do I manifest? How do I bring resources? Because that's an important part to this puzzle.
Yeah,
and
although
intention's got to be clear.
Yeah, although you know one of the tricky parts here, and if you think about the Black Panthers, you recall that if they became a nail that was sticking up too far up, you know, they were stuck up too high, and so the hammer hits that nail first.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's something to be said for being small and being under the radar, because when you start making too much noise and you're doing really good thing for people who really need help, somehow that gets the attention of the darker forces, and it can cause some problems. So you have to take care. You have to take care. Sometimes it's better to stay small. You know, it's like we've been able to do this radio show for these many years and have never been sued by some big corporation that we've trashed on, because we keep it a little bit small. So sometimes small is beautiful. You just have to kind of find the sustenance to keep going. But it sounds like you have it.
Wow.
And hopefully, you know, listeners will. Let's give out your websites again.
Oh, website is onefam.org. It's onefam.org. That's the nonprofit community organization. And a project of that is our bike shop, which is Bikes for Life. It's bikes with the number 4, life.com.
And if somebody isn't online, believe it or not, some people are not, if they want to come over and help and they live in the area, is there a phone number can give out?
452-BIKE. It's real easy. 452-BIKE. That's 2453.
And that's in the 510?
Yes.
Okay.
And we're right near West Oakland Park.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's see. I'm trying to think. Any last words? We've got a minute left. Is there any last thing you want to say?
No, I just want to thank you and your listeners, and for all the work that you did and everything that you're putting out, the vibrations in the world that's positive, and, you know, thinking enough of me and the work that I'm doing to invite me to your show. I'm very honored, and I really appreciate the opportunity.
Well, my mission is to educate people on how to take care of their health so that they're in charge. And part of being in charge is to just get busy the way you are, is to just get into the center of things and do it and not wait for something else to do it for you. So, Tony Coleman, One Fam and Bikes for Life, I want to thank you so much for the work that you do and for coming on the show and spending the time with us.
I know. Happy holidays to everybody.
You betcha. You too.
Come check us out sometime and pay us a visit. Come in, drop in, say hello.
Will do.
All right.
Thanks, Tony. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. And I want to eventually, with my music here, there we go. I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Lena Berman. Visit our website, yourownhealthandfitness, all spelled out, .org, yourownhealthandfitness.org, for easier extended access to, we have over 500 archive shows. Check out the changes to our library card. Find out about our practice, a free stream of this week's show, our book, and lots more. It's yourownhealthandfitness.org. And you can email us at admin, @yourownhealthandfitness.org. Your Own Health and Fitness is produced by Lena Berman and Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett. Remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom.